Yeah, welcome to the Laravel IO podcast. This is Sean McCool, and I'm joined by Matt Machuga and Chris Fidal. Matt Machuga has been on here a couple times, but Chris is new. Chris, why don't you tell us a few things about yourself?
Hi, I'm Chris. I work at a marketing agency, Digital Surgeons, here in New Haven, Connecticut. I lead up the tech team, which is mostly a lot of expression engine development, some custom app development. I've done some Laravel in production on some Facebook apps and some contest sites and that kind of thing. So, you know, I have some experience with actually bringing it into production.
So are you guys using 4 or like a mix between 3 and 4?
No, all 4. I used 3 once, but I really hopped into Laravel in the beta of 4.
Well, that's convenient.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So I guess last weekend was Laracon, huh?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I missed it.
Laracon's a blast.
I missed it too. I think I wasn't really there, like, mentally. I noticed that kind of trying to make sure all the speakers are happy and being hosts and everything, that I didn't really get to talk to everyone as much because Jason Lewis and all these people came that I talked to all the time on IRC, and I really spent very little time with anyone.
Yeah, you were like the man of all hats at Laracon. You were all over the place. And the downside was nobody mentioned their IRC names until they were leaving, for the most part. Like, day 2, everybody told me who they were. It's like, well, why didn't you tell me this at the beginning?
I know. Like, I think Jaunty Bear, I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I apologize. And Franz, I think the guy who does FlexBB, I didn't meet any of these people.
Yeah, I feel like you almost have to have a name tag of your Twitter handle or IRC handle on you at all times.
The name tags are impossible to read, though, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Otherwise, you're staring at someone's chest.
Let me look at your belly. I do not feel awkward at all.
What kind of talks did you guys hear, though?
We had, like, a wide variety of talks, kind of ranging from, you know, kind of object-oriented stuff, like Matt's talk, and getting into, like, Ben Corlett had a really cool talk about, you know, how to approach writing packages so that when you write a package, it's not like a Laravel-specific package, you know? And just in general, knowing when to write a package and how to use service providers to write packages in a way that, you know, your code isn't going to be, like, either reinventing the wheel or somebody else is going to have to reinvent the wheel because they want to use what you did on FuelPHP, so they have to port it over, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that seems to be the missing art right now, kind of generalizing so other people can use your code
outside
of Laravel. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it was a really good talk, and it definitely made me think about revisiting my packages. And it's funny, I got to thinking about my packages, and I'm thinking, man, I just want to destroy half of them, just wipe them off the planet.
Right?
Yeah.
He was super well-spoken about the entire thing, too, like very confident and just pounded through the entire presentation. It was really good.
Yeah, Ben Corlett, he's the lead developer at Cardalus, and he's not only a great developer, I just discovered at Laracon that he's also a great speaker.
Yeah, definitely. And he's only 21, which is awesome.
I can't nail that dude's age, because I just had no way of knowing, because he's so tall and everything, and he speaks that Australian accent, and it's all just so foreign to me.
Yeah, he was on like a 30-hour flight on his way over here, too. Like, he got laid over for a while and had to fly over China and weird stuff like that.
Wow.
He had an adventure, that's for sure. And then he discovered how difficult some steps in Amsterdam could be over at Frank's house.
Well, they are pretty steep.
I'm still convinced that was a ladder. That did not look like a set of steps.
Like, every single person that comes and visits, they're like, are these stairs safe? And then, you know, you use them for like a week or two, and then you don't even think about them.
Yeah, I don't know. Ben's really tall. Like, I'm, I don't know, like 6 foot, but my shoe size is 14 American, so it's like super hard for me to walk up and down normal size steps in general. So Frank's steps would definitely kill me. Like, hands down. I'm pretty sure Ben's feet were pretty big, too.
I have never been to Frank's place.
It's seriously a ladder. Like, he showed me a picture. It just goes straight up. I'm impressed, though. Frank's talk was really good as well.
Yeah, we had Frank's talk was over kind of, I guess, reaching out outside of your comfort zone with, like, technology and, like, learning from other languages and other communities and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Kind of a meta talk.
That's cool. Yeah, I actually learned a lot when I was sorry, I cut you off. I was saying I like that a lot, or I said I learned a lot from using Node.js a lot, because that's at some points when you're using Node, you kind of get really low level into HTTP and streams and that kind of thing, and that was actually really helpful for me to really figure out, you know, really what was going on with an HTTP request, which eventually led to me reading the HTTP spec and all that kind of stuff. So I think learning other languages is really, really important.
Yeah, he drew a good allusion over to JavaScript during his talk, too. He's like, okay, so here's how a promise works in JavaScript. Let's try to make something similar in PHP. So it was kind of a neat way to look at it. Frank discussed the build tools and different things like that that we can use. And, I mean, not to, like, cut it short, but I kind of want to, like, segue in on what Chris just said about HTTP. Russ's talk was awesome, like, super low level, super helpful on how you should be caching HTTP. Like, that was an amazing talk.
That dude is a monster. He's just...
You've seen that talk twice now, right?
Yeah, I've seen it a couple times, yeah. And it just keeps getting better. And his presentation skills are amazing, and he's interesting. When I went to Amsterdam PHP, which is where I found him, and remind me in a moment, I want to bring up a point about that. But when I saw him at Amsterdam PHP, I was going thinking, oh, this talk is going to be so boring, but I'm going to get free pizza and beer, and we're going to be good to go. But everyone was super engaged, and it was a great talk. We're like, man, we got to see if we can get this guy for Laracon.
Yeah, it was definitely a good pick. Like, he did amazing. I'm pretty sure I saw a favorite talk a few times on Joined In, where everyone was rating.
He had like three times as many ratings as everyone else, and it was all five stars, basically.
Yeah, it was super good, and it wasn't even language specific, which was really awesome. I really appreciated that.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that we all should know, and I didn't talk to anyone who didn't feel like they learned something.
Yeah, it was a really educational experience overall, and I mean, really, you could not have picked a better venue. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, the water's right there, the cruise ship or whatever that was right outside the building, that was amazing.
Yeah, so those are hotel boats. I think the cruise ships do dock, though, in there, so maybe I missed it, what you're talking about. But there are hotel boats that, like, are right there all the time.
Maybe that's what it was. I know Ben took one over to England and then came back on one, so it was probably what it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cruise ship then. But really quick, the point I wanted to make about Amsterdam PHP was what I think I'm going to really have to do is keep going to a bunch of meetups and keep seeing a bunch of talkers so I can, you know, watch and try to figure out, okay, how would this person fit into a conference, and what does that conference become with this talk, and, you know, kind of scout out speakers, because I wasn't really sure how to go about finding speakers. So basically I found people who I knew were, like, qualified, you know, and who had good ideas, you know, and who I kind of knew and who have, you know, most of the time given talks before. And so there was a mix of, you know, wanting to give some people a new opportunity and then getting some, you know, heavy hitters in, like Fabian and Taylor and Jordy. And so it was a really weird experience for me, but I really enjoyed all of it. And I'm kind of super glad it's done now, because I haven't been so calm in like months.
Yeah, planning has got to be so tough.
My buddy Jeroen and I kind of took the you know, brunt of the organization, and we kind of didn't really realize what we were getting into, to be honest. And then tickets kept selling, and we were like, this is getting pretty big. At first, you know, we weren't sure what to expect. It's like, maybe we have 100 people. It's planned for, you know, 100, but we ended up having like 184 or some people packed in there. So it was getting a little bit crowded in that main bar area.
Yeah, did you pick that venue ahead of time, or did you figure that out after you saw how many people were signing up?
We kind of had a couple venues on call where we had a chance to call them and confirm later, you know, but other than that, they blocked out that time for us. And
right.
If anyone else wanted to confirm that time, then we had first veto, you know, we could say, no, we'll take it. We confirm now, you know? So when the tickets started rolling in and we pretty much, one interesting thing was we sold something like 75% of all of our tickets in the first week and a half, 2 weeks, and the last week and a half. So between there's like an incredible lull where we were like, what is happening here? Are we not selling tickets? I don't know. But at the very end, we sold a bunch of tickets, and at the very beginning. So I think now that it might be a pattern to watch for. So if you're running something, observe how many people sign up in the first week or two, and then you can maybe gauge the total attendance in some way off of that.
Neat.
It's kind of interesting little pattern there. I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, it's
sense,
kind of like kind of like Kickstarter, right? How they always start strong and end strong, but the middle is this terrible lull.
Yeah, where everybody's like terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, the Edge phone went through that pretty well. It was nobody's contributing for a couple weeks there, and then everybody tried to get their last rush in, like, oh, please come through.
So did that work out?
No. I think 8 million.
It was teens, but, you know, it was less than half, or maybe it was at half.
That's too bad. I want one, but I don't want to invest in that capacity.
Yeah.
Chris, so am I correct? You're working on a book right now?
Yeah, I'm doing that. So I saw that. I'm going to start talking about it. If I start rambling, hopefully you can edit some stuff out. So I'm writing this book. I've been writing on my blog a lot, and people seem to like the content there. And when I saw kind of how many people were interested in all these books that were getting written, I, you know, decided me too.
Now, can I ask how you feel your book differentiates itself from the others?
Yeah. So, I actually emailed with Taylor about this a little bit, and I think they flow together pretty well, because you have CodeBright, which is, you know, the basics, how to use Laravel. Taylor's book, which is kind of the architecture of the application, and these more advanced concepts, right, like Solid and how Laravel uses dependency injection and, you know, service providers and all that kind of thing. And my book kind of is an example of all that. So I have an example application, and, you know, it starts with some basics, and it runs through using the repository pattern and that kind of thing. And all the while, I'm using dependency injection, using service providers, using Solid principles, and kind of building up this blog application.
So kind of more of a practical approach.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, learn by example. Because, you know, if you've read Taylor's book, which is, you know, it's not a prerequisite for my book, but it is a good starting point. If you've read his book and you have an understanding, you know, this is how the service provider is, you can have an idea of how it puts everything together between the Illuminate packages. You can kind of see it in action with making your own application library and adding in your own service providers and seeing how that, you know, that works with your code.
Can I ask you, does your book go, you know, you said that it covers the repository pattern, et cetera. Do you talk at all about when you would use the repository pattern and when you wouldn't?
Yeah, and that's been coming up a lot on Twitter lately, so I might even go into that a little more before it comes out. Right now I have a blurb, and that blurb is basically, don't go overboard with all this stuff. Because, you know, so many people want to use it, and they use it a lot, use it every time, and that can get into some pitfalls if you're just writing way too much code for, you know, a simple application.
So do you subscribe to, like, lean development philosophies?
That's a great question. I lean toward pragmatism, so it's I end up with this mix. There are times where that's a good question. So I mean, very pragmatic in terms of when I use certain design patterns, when I don't. So I don't always use the repository pattern, for instance. I'll just hop in and start using Eloquent right in the controller or something when something just needs to get done, or something's prototyped, or it's just quick. My blog, philelifer.com, is all in the controller right now. I think I might have moved some stuff to repository, but that was kind of like an incremental step. At Digital Surgeons, we are client-based, so we have, you know, a lot of projects and that kind of thing. And we'll do things like agile, you know, sometimes depending on if it makes sense for the client. Other times we have a full-on process that starts with, you know, in this discovery and design, and the development is a lot of expression engine, so that goes in the front end and then, you know, hooking into the expression engine side. So there's not a lot of room there for, you know, like a full-on agile with sprints and that kind of stuff.
So it sounds like you're using your experience to inform when you create additional architecture versus keep it simple, keeping it lean in the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Shit. Somebody say something smart. Matt, you say something smart.
Yeah, that's a challenge. Just like out of left field. Say something smart. No.
Yeah.
I got nothing. I was reading a tweet and my brain kind of broke reading it, so I, like, that was the worst time you
was
could have asked me.
Was it Grumpy Programmer?
No, I try to ignore that guy. Okay. Just like, there's too much saltiness on Twitter in general.
Yeah, but, you know,
it's like
so
something
true.
My, yeah, like, why can't people just be positive? I want people to get along and, like, collaborate.
Yeah.
Or at least be nice to each other.
I have this huge aversion to getting into Twitter fights, you know what I mean? Because it's just not productive. And a lot of times there'll be this long conversation on Twitter. People hop in and people kind of have their view on whatever the discussion on Twitter is. And it kind of is different from what else is talking about. And then points get missed. And then everyone's kind of like, no, this isn't what I mean. All in 140 characters with like six different people on the string. So maybe 120 of those characters are at whoever.
So maybe right. Not the most responsible way to have an informed discussion.
No.
No, there's zero chance of ambiguity in 140 characters. That's for sure.
So, Matt, I took your advice, and I finally got a copy of Practical Object-Oriented Design in Ruby by Sandy Metz.
Yes. Excellent book.
And I got to say, I think that this is probably the book that I would recommend to somebody who wanted to get into object-oriented programming and design for, like, any language, just to understand the concept of object-oriented programming.
Yeah, she does a great job of going over all the actual concepts and logic behind it. And yeah, the examples are in Ruby, and some of the stuff specific because, you know, like Ruby has a very unique object model, but she mentions, like, you know, this stuff came from Java. It's things that we've had for a long time, and a lot of people in Ruby are just rediscovering it. So it's a great primer for anybody doing that kind of stuff. And it gives you the trade-offs. She doesn't say, you absolutely should use X. It's, in this situation, X might be very helpful to you. In another situation, Y may be more helpful. Like I alluded to it very lightly in my talk, but she goes over inheritance and composition and discovering the pros and cons of each. And like I really appreciate things like that because it's not a hard rule that you have to use one or the other. It's just one will make it easier for you at that given time.
Yeah, it basically, if you want, I'm talking to listeners now, if you want to figure out if you want to get this book on object-oriented programming and design, hop on YouTube and type Sandy Metz, S-A-N-D-I-M-E-T-Z, and just watch any video with her, and I think you'll probably be sold pretty much immediately. She's a powerhouse.
She's a great speaker. And she's actually teaming up with another Rubyist, Katrina Owens, and they're doing kind of a, I don't know how you want to say it, like a pairing session during their talks. Like one starts off and then the other one has a session later in the day that kind of wraps up or goes like further in depth. So it's a neat little concept.
Yeah, I really like Katrina Owen. I saw a video with her in it and, you know, I started following her and she's another really good educator.
Yeah, her therapeutic refactoring video was extremely well spoken. I think she went over like really pragmatic and really like insightful ways of looking at your code to try to refactor it. Like the subtle things that you don't think about at first. Like she has the example of, I think it's a method that just has a bunch of string manipulation in there and nothing is kind of in sync with each other. And she winds up kind of cleaning it up all the way to that each line is doing the exact same operation, where you're just concatenating to a string or maybe she's adding it to an array and then concatenating it at the end. But it's the same operation every time. Like it's very logical. You can read it cleanly. And the starting point for that code was ridiculous. And then like her big plot twist is that I actually wrote this code. So it was me.
Sorry, everyone. But now we have to learn from it.
Yeah, exactly.
So
are they both Rubyists?
Yeah. I mean, Sandy did Java and stuff for years too, but,
Sandy
like
works at
big things, really.
What, Duke University, Berkeley, Duke. I want to say Duke. Anyway, she does, consulting, for organizations who have these like mega legacy, massive systems and they need to, you know, make it manageable. Cause you can't just rewrite systems. You, like the idea of rewriting most systems is you know, small sites, it's whatever. You can rewrite it. You're going to lose a little bit of money probably or whatever. Sometimes you get stuck, and the idea of refactoring is almost not even an option because everything's so coupled. But with these mega systems, you got to like approach it as like this long-term war.
Yeah, long-term maintenance.
I highly respect anybody who kind of markets themselves as a legacy saver or I can't think of the term right now, but they're like dedicated to going in and fixing your legacy project.
It's such a cool concept.
It's a great concept, but man, like that's got to be like maybe not so much in the Ruby world because you kind of know what you're walking into, but like for PHP people, like there was some crazy shit like 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Most crazy stuff you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, like I just can't picture doing that. Well, I guess you've done it, right, Sean?
We just finished building a massive CMS that was basically a re-envisioning of this old system. But for a long time, we maintained this old like CMS, just like this insane beast. And bit by bit, we refactored it into something that was maintainable, just so that we could solve problems and add features. Because otherwise it was just impossible, because what would happen is they had all these features like PHP HAML parsers that are just old and broken, and you know, you have like one white space problem and then the template like duplicates itself for some amazing reason. And so you have a page you go to and it's like two pages on top of each other. And you're like, what in the world could have caused this? There's like 100 partials that could be responsible. Which one has the white space problem? So bit by bit, we solved like these little problems, and it was just incredibly costly. And eventually, you know, it was like, well, actually, let's look at this in another way. Is this even solving the business need? And then when we kind of decided that it actually really kind of wasn't, let's make a much smaller system directly targeted to the need and kind of put new clients on that. So that's what we did, and we're still maintaining the old stuff, but for me, at some point in time, I got into the book Refactoring, Martin Fowler, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that, because I always knew what refactoring was, but I didn't know what a refactoring was. You know what I'm saying? So, like a single unit of safely modified code that can be verified to be good. You know, from the beginning of the refactoring to the end of the refactoring, this one specifically named refactoring is safe to do or not safe based on the refactoring, right? So these ideas like really like made me happy, because the things that stress me out are having to do all this thinking and all of the uncertainty, and the more uncertainty and the more like thought I can remove from the entire process, the more sane my whole life is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sorry.
So do you find you can kind of extract out into like an application library of your own, kind of, you know, have your own side library that helps out in the refactoring process, or is it?
Yeah, that's literally
kind of
what
like
we did.
Yeah, okay.
We made a mini framework within the application, and just like, or I guess a mini application, but it used a lot of I kind of used Laravel as a baseline, because I really like the syntax and everything.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of technology in there that I like, so I ended up kind of, you know, there's probably not very many actual Laravel classes in there, but a lot of the ideas are the same. So it's not exactly like direct plagiarism, but I'm pretty sure the license allows for it. Anyway, we just called it Refactor. So there's a subfolder called Refactor. And within there, I had another domain model separate from, well, there's no real way to pinpoint where the domain model actually was in the other app. So bit by bit, we would create classes in the refactor folder and move functionality. And then, wherever another piece of code would reference it, we'd point that to the right place. And so eventually, you know, we had a reasonable object-oriented structure to work with, and it saved a lot of headache. But there are just certain things I couldn't do. Like, I couldn't just redo the entire routing system because it was just too much, too tightly bound with everything, and
right.
It just wasn't going to happen. You know, there's too many unknowns, because this code base was just massive. It was taken over by team after team, and none of them knew how the system actually worked except for the people who originally wrote it. So in the first development team, or maybe the second, it's impossible for me to know, actual doctrine migrations were broken. So somebody started directly manipulating the database, and so we lost the migrations. We lost the ability to do all kinds of stuff with doctrine because we no longer had a direct, you know, a reasonable mapping. So it really changed the nature of these tools. And yeah, so it's kind of a flying by the seat of our pants and trying to damage control as much as possible. But it's really fun in a way. It has never been for me before, because I've been coding kind of professionally for like 15 years, and only in the past year and a half have I really started enjoying working on old systems, just kind of digging in there and seeing what I can do and start cleaning them up bit by bit. I don't know what happened, really. I think it's just now that PHP has real object-oriented capacity. Now, I mean, I guess I'm an object-oriented programmer at heart. I just want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, the latest PHP really gives you an avenue to do that, though, right? Because you can abstract out classes, abstract out functionality to a namespace now, and just kind of use that where you need it in some code.
Yeah, there were a lot of features that we very, very much so needed, and they're finally around. And I think there's an RPC. I think there's something out on the mailing list, the PHP mailing list, to get better namespaces going, or at least more functional.
What does that mean, better namespaces in this context?
Function levels, I believe.
Yeah. It's still not like a global namespace import. I shouldn't say global in that context.
I saw a withdrawn RFC that had namespacing for functions and constants. No, wait, it's auto-loading. That was auto-loading, sorry.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, there's an RFC out on that, on just like getting your functions in a namespace. Now, what is it? Now I'm confused.
Functions are already namespace.
Yeah, the functions are namespace because we have that in Laravel. Is it actually withdrawn? Like, did they canceled it, or
yeah, it was
did somebody just give up?
I don't know if there are others competing for it or anything like that. I did see a withdrawn proposal for auto-loading functions and constants.
Huh. Interesting. Maybe it's not coming then. I want a full namespace import. Like I don't like
yeah. Use Laravel.star or illuminate.star or /. See, I'm in all the wrong languages all the time.
Right?
Just like, give me C#, but I really like PHP for web development. I a lot of people complain about it, but to me it's just a detail, and it's not even, I don't even mind it. I enjoy it.
Right, like I like some of our back channel talks. Some people get very upset with us because we're sitting there like making fun of PHP, or we're making fun of something, and like, well, why do you use it? Like they get super angry about it. It's like, no, we use tons of languages and we can find faults in all of them. It's fine. It's not that we hate it. It's just we know what the faults are and we like to tease it about it. It's like the same thing if you're hanging out with your buddies. Like you're gonna tease each other over little things that don't matter. It's just fun. Like it's nature.
I think if you can fixed namespacing in PHP, to me, that is like the pain point. The one big pain point that, like, I don't want to have use and then like 5-6 classes at the top of my file.
Right.
It seems pointless. And I know that good namespacing practice it removes the need for a lot of that. So, you know, you have the classes that interact with each other as subsystems, all in the same kind of namespace, so that you don't have to do use for that kind of thing. But there's only so much you can do, really.
Right. At some point, they have to talk to other ones.
I do like that for auto-loading, though, because the other more traditional way of auto-loading was kind of Zend's thing, where you have an underscore for folder names, and then you end up with these ridiculously weird underscored class names that don't really make sense.
Yeah. Those were not great times.
Yeah, those were
they were my favorite.
That was so painful. It wasn't long ago when that changed. I was out. Like I've said this too many times, I need to stop talking about it. I was done with PHP and I was moving on. But then all of those things just changed all of a sudden. I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I was doing pretty much like Ruby, getting into exclusively at that point. And then 5.3 came around. And I was like, huh, we have usable stuff now. Okay, I'll stick around.
What's nice is it's been long enough now that the infrastructure's there, the code is there, so you can just go out and... I mean, how often do you really find code? And we were talking about this the other day. How often do you really find code that has underscore prefixes for private and properties? And how often do you find code that has those Zend, the old underscore namespacing convention? You don't really see that anymore.
Yeah, I think the FIG actually is helping that, the Framework Interoperability Group. And they take a lot of flack for their stuff, but like really we're moving in a direction. That's what I care about. We're not sitting stagnant in the old underscore days. Like it's going somewhere.
Yeah.
So
they're great.
Yeah. Like even if you hate it, you have to admit that's awesome.
Yeah. I don't, yeah. I absolutely don't hate the Fig at all. Like I switched, I do PSR2 straight PSR2 with one minor exception. I put a space in front of my exclamation point in conditionals. But I don't think anybody's going to get too angry with me.
No, I mean, the code conventions are, you know, take them or leave them. But the important part is the stuff that people are actually following, you know, the auto-loading and like namespace convention and that kind of thing.
Yeah. But I just went full on PSR2. Like I'm just going to adopt like for every single PSR standard I can, because from project to project, I'll just change my style, change everything just to see what it's like, right? But now with the standards, I kind of have a reason to just stick with one thing. So, you know, there's somebody over my shoulder saying, you know, you could just do the same thing as everyone else. And I'll be like, yeah, that sounds pretty nice. So now I don't have to make all these small decisions about, do I want spaces inside my parentheses?
Right. It's really surprising. It took us so long to do that in PHP. Like Python's had pep 8 for...
I know, it's the first thing you learn. It's like, I'm going to learn Python. What is the correct style? Pep 8, done.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Ruby doesn't have an official standard, but everybody uses nearly the exact same thing. And then there's, like, two camps for minor things, like parentheses placement, since most of them are optional. Like, there's Seattle style, and then there's whatever they call the other one. But, you know, like, everybody uses two spaces, or your library's pretty much just rejected from anything. Or, that's, like, our big one, really. Like, pretty much if you're not using two spaces for your indentation, it's just nobody knows what to do with your code, you know? Whereas we're still battling between tabs and spaces. Yes. And I love that everybody was not afraid to make jokes like that at Laricon. Like, the tabs versus spaces jokes, the PSR2 jokes, like, you know, everybody's comfortable with it when you're not, I guess, in the war zone, when you're sitting in IRC.
Also, yeah, like when you're in real life and you can actually see the people and know that they're human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's really a loud minority on that, too, because I'm sure most people are pragmatic enough to be, you know, to go with whatever's the standard for a project or, you know, whatever.
In reality, there's, like, one person or maybe a committee, if the situation's right, that actually even has that choice in per project. I just don't see it as a big deal. You know, somebody says, here's the standard for the project, and you say, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that tends to work out well on our team. Like, we have... we have a lot of JavaScript projects going on. We pretty much just pick up whatever the last team did. So, like, the project I moved off of, they're still using the same conventions that my team started with. And then on this new one I'm starting, everybody's picking up just the things we started with again. So even if you preferred the underscores in JS, it's like, okay, we're using camel case. We're using, so when you're using camel case, this actually comes up in Laravel. When you're exporting JSON, do you deserialize your things into underscore? Or I guess you can consider it serializing.
Right.
Like, if you're sending to JSON, Google, I think, recommends that you use camel case, but pretty much everyone else will use underscores.
Yeah.
So we actually translate all of our keys out to underscore when they leave the system.
That's what we're doing. That's what I'm doing. I say we, like anybody else is working on this with me. I've been using Ember.js and, so we in JavaScript we're exclusively camel case, so there's no mixing of anything. The attributes don't have a snake case, have no underscores anywhere, and then they're simply translated back to the API.
Like there's something about when I have JSON out in the wild, I like it to be standard underscore, like no magic stuff, no weird mixed casing. Like it has to all be one thing, and that's underscore for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. I mean, technically, that's just a decision made. I haven't actually written any backend because I'm just using Ember's fixtures to do the development of the app, which is really awesome, by the way. I'm not having to write any server-side anything. I'm really digging Ember. I learned AngularJS, I don't know, about a year ago to some passable level. Like, I'm able to support people every once in a while, you know. But Ember.js is kind of like a little bit more my style, I think.
What do you like better about it?
Yeah, so I like how it automatically creates controllers and everything for you, how it automatically builds out routes for you. Just whatever you want, it just builds. You know, like the defaults are there and they work. So if you have a route that has a model bound to it, that's an array of users, and then it'll go ahead and create a controller that is an array controller so that when you're interacting with your template, it'll automatically know how to deal with all these things. So there's a few like weird things I've been having to deal with as far as paradigm goes. And I find that's the most difficult. I think that's obviously the most difficult part of learning these things. It's like you have the template, and in this case, I'm just using handlebars, like, you know, the standard Ember way. And that template interacts with bindings from a controller. That controller basically just exists to interact with the template. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, data bindings are happening with that controller. But that controller is also informed and configured by the route. So when you go to /projects/1, then that route says, okay, you're trying to load this project. And then that's your model for that route. And then your controller says, okay, we have a project loaded. Instead of being an array controller, I'm going to be an object controller so that all the template interactions are appropriate for the model of this route. And it's just weird for me to get used to. I'm starting to wrap my head around it. I've gotten into RSVP and, you know, I'm making promises and all that's really fun. Cause, you know, I've known the idea of a promise object for a while, but never really have I gotten, you know, dug into it and actually coded stuff with it and, you know, made stuff. So I'm having a blast, man. I really like Ember. And I really love that it automatically builds stuff for me.
Cool. I think Ember's big, I think they actually use it as a marketing point, but they're pretty close to like Smalltalk MVC and just, like Objective-C. The routes are like the one thing that kind of stands out. I guess it's kind of like a view controller maybe, but like everything else is pretty similar. And, like I had a really good time with it before we switched over to Angular. I think, Handlebars is probably the best front end templating language I've worked with so far. Like I think it's brilliant. Does a great job with that stuff, but it's definitely like a paradigm switch going between Angular and Ember. Like they just handle things so differently, and it took me a while to adapt to Angular, but you know, like they're both great. And for anybody who wants to learn Ember, even though is the 1.0 out yet? 1.0 stable? I'm not sure if it's out or not.
It's not stable. It's like a release candidate, but. I mean, the important thing for me, I switched to 1.0 I switched to the newest version of everything because I don't want to be coding to old API.
Have you guys heard of this RFC for named parameters that's actually out right now?
The variadic ones, or did somebody put in a name parameter too?
Oh, you're cutting out for me a little bit again.
Well, he was asking if you're talking about the variadic parameters or just named parameters.
Just name parameters. I think Phil Sturgeon kind of revived an RFC out there, or either that, or he's just talking about it a lot. But it's one that I like a lot.
Man, name parameters will change a lot.
Yeah, I mean, having to do like true, false, 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 true, just so you can get to that last default parameter to change it is such a pain.
That's not object-oriented programming, though. Like, you shouldn't have a bunch of Booleans, right?
Oh, yeah, you mean for dependencies on a method?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like a really big smell to have a huge chain of parameters.
Yeah, but even a lot of or a few PHP methods have that, I found.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Core PHP methods.
That's a little different because PHP is, you know, functions. It's not a bunch of objects that you're using.
Sorry, I'm just reading that link. Distraction.
Well, if we could get named parameters and variadics, then we'd be like one step closer to taking over Python. If only could get a good class importing system. I think Python's the way that they handle modules is just out of this world. I think it's great.
It's weird how many people love or hate that. Like, there is no middle ground.
I thought that everybody just universally loved Python, but I'm finding out recently that that's not the case.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, I think their module system's brilliant. I wish we could have something like that, but nope. Maybe one day.
I like any import syntax, like Ruby and Python. I enjoyed it a lot. I did ActionScript 3 years and years and years ago, and I like that
ActionScript
entire
is
model
fun.
Of coding a lot. It's so fun to code in.
Yeah.
It's actually how I learned object-oriented programming, too. I read a bunch of design pattern books on it, everything, all specific to ActionScript 3, and that was a lot of fun because it's like game development and
yeah, that's what I use it
model,
for
modeling physics. It's really fun.
I just don't understand when people don't like ActionScript, because to me it was always a good time, so every time.
Yeah.
I've not really seen ActionScript, but your Booleans are really weird in ActionScript. That's like the only exposure I've had to it, and it was one of my coworkers going, I don't understand. But what is it? Is it quote true? Is that what your Booleans are? Or not your Booleans, but
honestly, Booleans? I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't remember at all.
There was just something I remember seeing about the Boolean syntax, which is really weird, and I think you had to quote true, like it was a string true or something like that. Like, you know how Objective-C is yes and no, but it's still kind of like the constant yes and no? It still kind of makes sense, but ActionScript threw me for a loop.
I wonder if that was an older ActionScript. I'm just looking, I just Googled it real quick, and it looks like it's a normal true or false.
Yeah, I don't know. I've only used ActionScript 3, so I can't say. So. Maybe that's why people hate ActionScript. It's like PHP 3 or something. They're like, man, PHP is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very well possible. It might have been ActionScript 2 because it was like a really old application. It was just kind of like maintenance work, trying to make sure it stays online.
Right.
I've actually also never actually worked on an application. It was only game development, so...
Yeah, like I'm looking through the old ActionScript 2 docs, and none of these look right. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I saw something different.
So, Chris, when is your book actually going to come out?
Hopefully about a week from now. It's out to a few people to review. I'm waiting to hear back from some of them, and then I can, you know, finish up writing it. I'm really hoping their feedback isn't everything sucks and you need to rewrite this, because that would be terrible. But
I think that, you know, if people want to check it out, they should just read your blog and see what they feel about that, and then if they like it, get the book.
Yeah, that's very much the reading style. Sometimes I wonder if I'm driving people crazy, because I use we a lot. Like, all right, we're going to do this next. Let's code it like this. When, I don't know, sometimes my own head, it just sounds so cheesy, but I'm hoping it comes across as okay.
I know what you mean, man. I wrote a lot of blog posts and did a lot of screencasts, and I go back and look at old stuff, and I'm like, oh, can I just... I asked Justin, can I delete all the blog posts on our site now?
Yeah, especially if your writing style changes over time.
Oh, so bad.
So maybe you can just drop it to, like, the most honest people you know, and that's the best way to get some review.
Yeah, like, right?
Sean's pretty bluntly honest if you want to give him something. So it's always nice to send him some code, and he's like, maybe.
Yeah, totally. I can send you guys the previews of it I have so far.
Cool, man. So is that like a lean pub thing, or what's your approach?
Yeah, it's completely lean pub. I love that model. I don't know if you guys have tried to do anything with it, but they sync to your Dropbox, and in your Dropbox you can make these text files, and in the text files you just write Markdown, which I love. I write in Markdown all day long. My blog is actually Markdown powered. My admin area, I'm just writing in a big text area, and I just throw in Markdown there. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, Markdown's great. We jump through hoops to make sure Markdown's going to work. Like, we have a client where you need a WYSIWYG editor, and we use Redactor. I don't really know how you're supposed to pronounce it. Redactor, who knows? And so we translate it. We have the controls limited to only what cleanly translates to Markdown, and then we translate it to Markdown on submit. And send it into the thing, and then when it comes back in, it gets translated into HTML. So it's really simple stuff, really simple HTML, really simple Markdown, but it allows us to have all the content in Markdown, because, man, if I have to store HTML in a database, I'm going to shoot myself in the head.
Yeah, seriously, not worth it.
No, not at all. what do you use for normal Markdown editing? Like, I use, it's called Moo, I think it's pronounced.
Yeah, that's what I use.
You guys are on the OS, or on a Mac, right?
Yeah.
So I use Sublime Text because I don't think I have anything cool in Linux.
Yeah, they're probably a bit limited. There's, what is it called? I think it's like Dillinger.io for an online one.
Yeah, right.
I used that for a little bit, and that was pretty decent. But Moo is pretty much just using WebKit. Like, you can tell it's a WebKit rendered object because...
Yeah, I think a few versions ago, you could right-click and inspect element.
What? Damn it, I'm blanking on it. Paul Irish you can see his pink highlighting for his CSS library. So, like, you can clearly tell it's CSS 3 and or HTML.
Yeah. Yeah, a few versions ago on the preview pane, you used to be able to right-click and inspect element and just take the HTML. I actually found the CSS file that way and used it on a site like a few years ago.
Nice, that's awesome.
Yeah.
They got some fun stuff, though. I really... like I edit all my markdown that's going to go on to GitHub that way just to make sure it renders the way I expect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really nice.
Although it doesn't like the syntax for saying what language you're using. You know what I mean? In the code fences where you can define if it's PHP or Ruby or something like that.
Yeah, I'm really hoping they allow the custom markdown definitions. There's some other program on Mac that has that. I can't remember who it is, but I would really like to see Moo get that. Because that would make it pretty much perfect at that point.
Yeah, that app is great. I've tried even Writer, which is a really good writing app, but I still go back to Moo because I love the preview pane being right next to it.
Yeah, iWriter worked for me for a little bit, and then I started writing some of my screencast scripts with it, and it would, like, I don't know if it was an artifact or if it was actually destroying the file, but it would just wreck up everything I was doing. Like, I couldn't read the script halfway down, so I'd have to, like, relaunch the application. Mm-hmm. Like, it just has some rendering issue. At least this is, like, 6 months ago, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt, but I couldn't keep my scripts written in that anymore. So that's like when I started the search around for an alternative. But it has a really nice interface. I'll give it that. It just completely, like, I don't know. It doesn't like me. It does not like super long files. Because, like, I don't know. I'm not like Jeffrey Way where I can just, like, run through it and kind of, like, you know, come up with things on the fly. If I'm not talking to an audience, if I'm just, like, typing and talking, I cannot do it. I'm so uncoordinated. I have, like, no typing skills. So, like, I need a full script. I need to do it differently.
I don't know how he's done live coding presentations before also. I'm 200% typos if I'm ever writing code alone, never mind with, like, people looking over my shoulder.
I know. It's a terrifying idea.
The delete key is just always getting hit.
Plus, I feel like I'm probably more of, like, a stumble-through-it programmer than a lot of other people than I want other people to know. So I don't want to, like, have to go, like, oh, man. Because I'm using a text editor all the time, so either I remember exactly the stuff I'm doing, because I don't want a bunch of, like, Sublime Code intel and stuff in my stuff. I don't want any of that in there. So it's either I remember it or I'm referencing something.
Yeah, speaking tons of notes.
Yeah, but really, like, that's how everyone's doing it anyway. Like, none of us have any of this memorized. We're just Googling or pulling up docs, something like that. Yeah. Like, we can have pieces memorized, but... Yeah, like, I reference stuff insanely often, just because, like, I can't commit a lot of it to memory.
And there's no reason you should, because the documentation is out there all the time.
Right. A smart person once said, never waste your, you know, time committing something to memory that it can be read in a book.
Yeah, definitely.
It's Einstein or something.
Before Google.
Someone smart like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, in general, they delete my comment about ActionScript because clearly I don't know what I saw. I was going to get, like, hate mail, like, you're a dumbass.
That is not ActionScript, my friend. ActionScript to me is, like, the most generic object-oriented language ever. It's just like you expect something to work and it's there and it's that way. It's just how it is.
Right. I have no idea. I'm just going to take your word for it.
It's like a Java Lite, I guess.
Yeah, anyway. That's a good description. It's very Java-ish.
Yeah. Cool.
Although, I guess so is PHP, if you ask certain people.
You gotta be careful when you say that.
No, nobody thinks that. It's just Java. People say that about some... Honestly, the complaint about Java is insane to me. I think Java's a really good language, and I can understand... I can understand, you know, kind of where they're coming from, but, you know, we don't really actually have that in PHP. You know, it's just not that way. It's just people are just worried about too much architecture and too much boilerplate. And I think that there's, like, a cargo cult thing going on there where some people are getting into this stuff new and they're just throwing it everywhere. And, you know, I don't think that most developers who are out there submitting good code to packages, downloading stuff off packages, I just don't think that it's a real problem.
Yeah, right. And then, I mean, that moderation you kind of learn with experience anyway. So, I mean, I know at first when I learn a design pattern, I just throw it at everything. You know, it's my hammer and everything is on edge.
Right.
That, you know, you have some experience with it and you figure out where it's really bad and where it's really
good. Yeah, you have to play with it to know.
Use it sparingly.
Yeah, I was just salty when I was younger. Like, I learned on C++ and C, so I'm like, it doesn't compile. It's not fast enough. So, like, Java was just always weird to me. And then, like, once I actually came to understand it, I disliked it for other reasons. But, like, ultimately, we owe a lot to the Java community and just Java in general. Like, most of our best practices came from there. So
yeah, I agree.
I totally respect it. I still don't want to actually write it, but I respect it.
Okay. Well, leave you with this note. There is a person talking about the evolution of language video talking about the design of Java. You totally should go to YouTube and check it out. I have no idea what the name is. I'm going to put the link in the post on Laravel.io. Awesome video where he starts using only really basic words, and he doesn't use anything that he hasn't either defined or defined a rule for. So over the course of the talk, his language becomes more and more complex, and he uses that to explain how they designed Java and why they made certain decisions. And I thought that was just a fantastic video.
That sounds amazing.
That sounds cool.
You should totally check it. But we totally got to go. Thank you both very much for being on.
Thanks. All right, thanks, Sean.
All right, bye.